Hi, and welcome to episode 65 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville. And joining me to gatecrash the wedding party that is indie comics this week are writer, artist, and creator of the superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And Tony Esmond would normally be here, but he can't because he's off saving lives, isn't he, Dan?
Indeed, yeah. Doing his superhero gig on the side.
Yeah. He's breaking world records. He's doing all kinds of things. The worst possible thing you can imagine he's probably doing at this moment in time.
He did actually just send us a picture of him in a calf. So,
way to break the illusion, Dan. So Tony, you will be missed by all of us.
Indeed, yeah.
Dan, myself, and our guest. Because we picked a guest this week who can quite suitably fill the void of Tony Esmond in some kind of way, and more. He's a writer whose work we've mentioned a few times on this show. Mm. Always in a good light, he'll be very pleased to know. You may know him from his writing duties on the titles Negative Space, from Dark Horse, Chum, from Comics Tribe, and the uber-cool Antler Noir series, yes, I said Antler Noir, Dear Editor, the third book of which is just a few days away from finishing another successful Kickstarter campaign. So it's our pleasure to welcome Ryan K. Lindsay to the show. Hello.
Hey, good day, guys. How you going?
Yeah, Ryan.
Ryan is our first Australian guest, and he immediately proved that by saying good day.
I do honest, like I do say it because people go, oh, you know, Aussies don't say good day until like they get to America and then they say it. But it does. It just slips. It's what I say in like the halls as I pass kids. And actually, I dated an American girl once, and I was in her room, and her dad called, and I picked up the phone. I was like, "Oh, good day, Ryan speaking," and all I heard was this, like, "Ah, this guy was laughing his ass off," and I just like quickly like pulled the phone away, and I'm like, "Ah, oh, Katie, it's your dad."
Already, we're getting to the behind the scenes how this man came to be.
it's all origin story. Oh yeah.
Yes, the origin story of Ryan K. Lindsay is going to be this week, as well as what he's up to now, Dear Editor, which I cannot wait to talk about, just purely to see what on earth went through his mind when he came up with this.
Absolutely.
But we will get to all that in good time. We've got plenty of cool stuff to talk about this week. But before we do that, let's talk about some comics. Dan, you've got something to talk about.
Yeah, I saw this one pop up on a Facebook group, the Ashcan, which is kind of small press indie web stuff on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Sicario. And I'm going to absolutely murder everyone's name involved with this, as we usually do.
This wouldn't be an Awesome Comics podcast if we didn't murder every single creator's name that we ever mention.
So you can find it at oldskullcomics.blogspot.co.uk. So it's written by Gerardo Presadio, illustrated by Abraham Catassi, colours by Hedwin Zaladivoir, produced by David Marquez. There you go. That's not too
well
bad.
Well done, Dan.
That's impressive.
Oh, thank you.
Nailed it.
It's a really violent, sweary comic. So if that's your kind of cup of tea, you're going to love this one. It tells the story of a racist American sicario, which is a hitman who works for El Cartel del Cico del Diablo. And it kind of opens up with him bursting through into kind of a warehouse, blasting away, slaughtering another cartel of drug dealers. And you kind of quickly find out that he works for the CIA and he's actually undercover. And essentially the bust goes bad and this designer street drug called Ojo de Dios, which is the God's Eye, kind of spins the story on its head. And I can't really tell you too much more about that without giving away the twist and what makes this comic really good. But I can only say go check it out and take a look yourself. I'm going to say something about the website. We encountered this before we came on. I'd only looked at this on tablets and mobiles. And when you go onto the laptop or the desktop version, they've got music playing in the background and it is fucking loud. So get ready for that.
Is it a MIDI file?
I don't know. I've not come across a website that plays music automatically in years. I was completely unprepared for it. I couldn't find out how to turn it off. But
spectacular.
There was a moment before we started recording where I was talking to Dan about the show and, you know, the plans for the show, and he just went, "What the fuck?" out of nowhere.
I was like, "Where the hell is this music coming from?" But maybe reconsider doing that. I'm not sure if too many people are going to like that. Yes, the comic kind of brings to mind, it's very much like The Punisher. It's very kind of grim and gritty. The art and the dialogue both back that up, and both are really well done. The characters are really well rendered and fleshed out by the writer within a couple of pages. The main characters, yeah, he's kind of a bigoted racist. And after he's finished slaughtering all the kind of the Mexican guys, which he's calling them bean eaters and stuff, he goes, "Oh, thank God I voted Trump." So it's obviously set in a kind of reality where, or a future that's kind of, it's gone that way. But I feel like kind of the journey for the character is going to be, again, I can't tell you too much more about it, but it seems like he's going to have his mind opened up to things that he's not quite ready for. Yes, great. The art, it reminds me very much of Len Wein. It's black and white throughout and then kind of transitions into colour a bit later. Yeah, so go oldschoolcomics.blogspot.co.uk, Sicario, and check that one out. It's really good.
That's a .co.uk.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite interesting.
It's an interesting one.
It sounds like to me like it was translated from, as you know, do you think it was originally intended to be English? Or do you think?
To be honest, there's a number of comics on this site. I don't really know how they work it. There's like on one page you can just scroll down and you can read all of them, and from first glance there's about four or five titles. So I'm not sure how they work or what they do. Yeah, because there's a different art team on each one, different writer, so yeah. I don't know what the setup is, to be honest.
But it's something that we could possibly, there's plenty of stuff to delve into then.
Really? Yeah, I mean, just on this first page alone, there's like four or five comics you can go through, and they look like, I don't think they're full issues, but they're kind of like 15 pages long, odd, but they all seem to be really high concept comics, and the writing on them is great, as is the art, so there's a lot there to check out.
The quality's there, it's just depending on your flavour of story, isn't it, really?
Yeah, just make sure you got the old headphones turned down.
Amazing. That sounds really cool. I think I'm going to put my Mac on mute and then check out the website a bit later.
Yeah, good call. Yeah. Don't do it at work. When they say it's not safe for work, you're like, oh, cool. And then it's just music. You're like, ah.
Yeah. Everyone in the office spins around, looks at you.
Yeah.
That is not work.
Oh, so definitely check that one out. My pick for this week is another Comixology one. Anyone who listens to this show knows that I normally check out my weekly comics weekly on Comixology now that my local comic book store isn't the greatest, I would say. So it's nice to have that sort of on tap that I can get to. And I picked up a graphic novel on there called Ghosts by Raina Telgemeier. Now, she is a creator who is an Eisner Award winner for books Smile and Sisters. And she's also done a book called Drama as well. Now, this is a book from Scholastic. Now,
really?
In the credits on Comixology, it's Graphics, which is an imprint of Scholastic. So I guess Scholastic published the hardcovers and stuff.
Yeah, so, they do a bit of original content, and they just pump it through schools.
That's awesome, really, isn't it?
She's probably one of the highest-selling comic creators at all, like at the moment. Like, no, she hits the New York Times bestseller list a lot. She's in there at the moment.
Yeah.
With Smile, I believe, and she's been up there before. She's sold, I believe, like collectively in the millions. Her stuff is huge through Scholastic and book fairs and there's like a book reader, you get your parents to buy it through the magazine, things that they send home through class. She's an absolute titan. She's just not big and comic book stores or you know, the superhero fair. No, her stuff is, and like I'm a teacher, and the amount of kids I know that read the stuff is huge.
Really? So have you seen Smile or Sisters then? Have you seen those ones?
Sisters. A kid had Sisters in class just the other week. I've seen a few of her titles rolling around in the library. I mean, and they're always at the book fair.
I haven't seen those ones, but if it's the quality of Ghosts, then it's well worth checking out. I mean, we've talked on this show that one of the big things that comics has to do is to get into the hands of the people that don't read comics. That new audience, like say the schools, you know. I mean, that's not to say that Scholastic are going to take your Judge Dredd character and then like just pump it out to all the kids. But sadly, my Total Recall graphic novel isn't going to go anywhere soon. But it's great to know that, like, a book like this, you know, the sequential medium is getting out to, like, this hungry audience.
Hmm.
And that was one of the things. When I saw the book, I mean, it looked quite nice. I mean, she's a big hitter, but I didn't know of her. So when I saw this, literally on Comixology, I just went by how it looked and the story of it. Now, Ghosts is about a family who move into a new town. Here's the basic premise. Katrina and her family are moving to the coast of North California because her little sister, Maya, is sick. Kat isn't happy about leaving her friends for Bahia de la Luna. God, Dan.
That's all right.
But Maya has cystic fibrosis and will benefit from the cool, salty air that blows in from the sea. As the girls explore their new home, a neighbour lets them in on a secret. There are ghosts in the town. Mayo is determined to meet one, but Kat wants nothing to do with them. As the time of year when ghosts reunite with their loved ones approaches, which is like the Day of the Dead festival, Kat must figure out how to put aside her fears for her sister's sake and her own. Now, you know, I'm a big fan of Supernatural, so as soon as I saw Ghosts, I thought, oh, what's this? Mm. And then when I checked out the pages, she's got a wonderful style. Wonderful sort of animated. It looks effortless. It's such a simple style but she gets across such emotion and such wonderful storytelling. And also, it's dealing with like serious subjects. Like there is a section on in the back about cystic fibrosis, and which is an illness that I myself don't know too much about. So I checked out the website, and you know, it has links and brilliant stuff like that. But it doesn't treat. It's not like this girl, Maya, is ill and you should feel sorry for her. This girl has more life than anyone put together. You know what I mean? She has this illness, but she just wants to live life and just explore everything. You know, she's a wonderful, you know, she's a young girl, but she just wants to experience everything. So when she discovers that ghosts are in the town, she's all over it, like white on rice. It's, you know, whereas her sister is the, you've seen those stories before, a kid moves to a new town, leaves their friends behind and they're not really happy about it. And it's this story that goes through how she comes to terms with it and and there are ghosts, there are actual spooky ghosts, but this isn't we're not talking a Steve Niles type ghost here. This is a supernatural ghost story that is really uplifting and heartfelt. And, I highly recommend this. This was also, I got it on Comixology and it was $4.99, but it's 250 pages.
Nice.
Yeah, 250 pages.
That's a good price.
Yeah, and like you're talking 230 of that are the story themselves. There's back matter. There's notes, like I said, there's notes about cystic fibrosis. There's a sketchbook featuring like sketches of places and characters. And she notes that these characters are, you know, these sketches are like 8 years old, which is, it's just proof of the pudding that like sometimes you have an idea for a story in your head. And it's not the right time for it. You know, you have to keep working at it. And when it's perfect, then's the time to do it. I think that's a learning that some people should take, that sometimes a story doesn't need to be rushed, especially when it's dealing with, like, you know, pretty sensitive subjects, should we say. Plus, there's lots of stuff talking about Scholastic. There's lots of notes about her. You know, it's just a wonderful put-together book. It's not out hardcover yet. It's coming out on the 6th of October. So, you know, digital came first, which I didn't know about. I feel like I've got in early on something quite special here. It's going to be out 6th of October, and it will be £9.99 English pounds then. And that's on Amazon and the like. But you can get it now on Comixology. I'm not sure. If it's Scholastic, I would imagine that they've rolled it out quite wide. You know, that's the beauty of having that kind of... that publishing house behind you, isn't it? Because they can get it into the hands of people that wouldn't necessarily normally look for these sort of books.
You're saying, Ryan, that the school kids at your school actually have this already. Interesting.
Okay. Not ghosts. No.
Not ghosts. Okay.
Previous stuff.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, but this one I'd imagine will be hitting the stores, and it's a fun story. It's good for kids. It's like like I always say, the great sort of children's stories aren't talking down to anyone. They're the stories that everyone can, you know, get something from.
Mm.
And this one does it brilliantly. So I highly recommend that you check this out. So
sounds good. I like that it obviously grabbed your attention without too much sort of a fanfare. That you were just stood up on its own merits. That's really cool.
I mean, every Wednesday, you know, the new comic book day, I always... you know, you get the plethora of the big two books and all the Image books.
Yeah.
I always go to the section of like the indie publishing, you know, the Comixology submit, you know, just to see if there's any gems hidden amongst all the, all, you know, because there's an awful lot that comes out. Everyone's making comics these days. I don't know about you, but yeah, to find this one was just, it was one of those gems. And normally, you know, when I thought $4.99, you know, and then I saw how many pages there were, I thought, cool, yeah, this is a bargain.
Yeah, they're selling that cheaply.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. I know Ryan's no stranger to offering a huge amount of value when it comes to digital books, but we'll get to that soon enough.
Absolutely. I do believe it. And Comixology is one of those real testing grounds where I did watch it, and I was watching books go up for $3.99 a single issue, and people don't want to pay it.
No.
And of course, some people do, but the majority of people I know won't. And then if a book is 99 cents, they'll take a gamble. And when there's a 99 cent sale, they'll strike. I know I do. And I think that there's something about that. And it's been interesting to watch Comixology sort of travel and grow and work out exactly how they're going to run things and move things around. It's like the amount of sales they have just constantly now is great.
Yeah.
I love it. You go on there, any day of the week you go on there, you'll find at least one sale on there. And, you know, I look for the Marvel sales on Mondays and Fridays and things like that. Like, it's, you just start to realize that it's a smart way to push back catalog, and it's a smart way to push a series in waiting for the next arc, or, you know, try to get new readers in for trying something that only half landed, perhaps. Like, it's... And especially on the indie scene, like, you look at the Comixology submit books, and they're $3.99 for a single issue, and they've got one review because no one's paying that.
Yeah,
I think that's crazy. Some of the prices that the smaller guys charge, like, if not the same, more than kind of the big two and the rest.
Yeah,
you got to kind of really lower your prices on that to get people to take a punt, because for £4 or £5, no one's going to do that. Well,
yeah. I also notice sometimes, like, when there's books that are slightly cheaper and I think, oh, you know, this is obviously going to be great value, and it's only like 10 pages. People are doing that now. They're offering sort of short stories, which I'm not sure how I feel about that, but, you know, everyone's got to make their money somehow. But and also, we've spoken about this on the show before, when it comes to collected editions, I have actually seen collected editions on Comixology for like £20.
Yeah, it's insane.
That to me, this is just personal, and everything on this show is always our personal opinion. We're not telling you the wrong way, but for me, £20 for, I don't know, 150 pages of a digital sort of book, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't agree with that. I don't, you know. But then again,
have the physical copy.
Yeah,
well, the same price. You could go on Book Depository and get it sent to you for like, it's ridiculous. But then when they do a sale and they have those trades for like $4.
Yeah,
that's when people jump in, I'm sure, because I can't imagine anyone spending that. I don't know. I have a mental block around it, even if it's a lot of pages, I'm still like, it's still digital. Oh, what am I? Like, $5 is like the tops I'd pay for like anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure enough.
I'm glad there's someone out there like me who wants to hold on to his pennies. Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. I'll be buried with them like some sort of pharaoh. Absolutely.
Ryan, is there any books you've read recently that have?
There is one. I found I haven't had a lot of time to read lately, and certainly a lot of what I've been reading is just sort of DC and bounce around their back catalog for obvious reasons. But there's one book, like, I love it when I find a book that just really, you know, excites me, and it's the Black Monday Murders by Tom Coker and Jonathan Hickman. That book, I didn't know what it would be like, and Hickman for me is real hit and miss. I find some of his stuff is phenomenal, and some of his stuff I just get lost in because it's too convoluted. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll give it a lash. Yeah. I'll get that first issue, and it was brilliant. Like, just really, really well layered storytelling. Because it's this big, sort of like almost hidden Illuminati type conspiracy thing spanning decades. So instantly you're like, oh, great, Hickman's telling something over a century. Oh, man, how many circles do I need to memorize? What's going on? you worry, and I got the sweats up, but each scene is so good and stands on, and the pairing with Tom Coker's art is phenomenal. Like, it's just so well matched. And there's only two issues out so far, and yet I'm already sort of like getting a feel for the characters, of which there are many. But you still sort of, you get it. Yeah, it just, it was one that I closed the first issue and was instantly just like, what tab, what can I open up to start writing right now? I am like, really? I'm jacked up. I am ready to go. Like, yeah. So I probably just opened Twitter and just like blast post tweets. It's writing, man. It counts. But no, I was like really amped, and I love finding a book that will do that to you. Like, there are books you enjoy, obviously, but a book like, whenever I read, pretty much every time I read a Brubaker Phillips issue, I come out of it and I'm just like, oh, there's a good solid minute where I'm like, give up, man. What are you doing? You're gonna try and share some space with that?
Yeah, you can send, you read something and then that affects what you're working on at that moment. Do you know what I mean? You say, you read a great alien story, you go, yeah, I could work aliens into this one as well, and then you think, no, you've got to be disciplined and tell the story you're telling.
That's the thing. But then it's also, it's a matter of like trying to find the strange little influences that will give you a tweak. Like, I'm sort of breaking this story at the moment for like a creator owned thing. Mm. And then I was listening to Nerdist Writers podcast with Chuck Palahniuk and Jim Mills, who wrote the adaptation for the film Fight Club.
Yeah.
And they were just talking about something random, and it was this one little thing, and I was like, oh, I need that in my story. Like, of course, that's what's going to like take the swerve. And it's not like a steal from Fight Club. It was more just something they were mentioning, but it just gave me this click. And so especially when I'm breaking story, I find, yeah, watch some TV shows, listen to podcasts, you know, crack the comics out. And usually, like, you will see something, like you will see Batman sitting there, cowl in his lap, and you will go, oh, I need a scene of, you know, them on the shitter thinking about something. Brilliant, I made the connection, thanks Batman. And Batman's like, I'm not pooping, man, what are you doing, come on. But you've made that jump, and it had that slight little bit of influence, because otherwise the alternative is like sitting there and staring at the screen, and that's not going to help you break through.
Yeah.
Or so very rarely will. But usually, to be honest, it's a matter of like reading that Batman comic, listening to that podcast, and then it's like having a shower, or it's mowing the lawn, or it's doing something else. And your brain has been just like turning it and turning it and turning it, and finally like, oh, I get it. Oh, I've unlocked this tiny little piece that needed to happen. And you go, oh, okay. These things start to make sense now. When reading comics, I don't get too worried, unless you're like stealing whole, like, you know, plot beats or something like that.
Would you say those kind of snap moments never really ever happen when you're sitting in front of your machine? It's always like doing something else.
So rarely,
yeah.
You can have a good flow when you're sitting on the screen, but yeah, you've usually, it's like, I'll try and set myself a task to do something away from the computer that I actively want to do, because I know that's when my brain will be like, oh, good idea, go type it down. Oh, good idea, type it down. And I'm like, but I want to be over here making, you know, scones. No, get in there. And then I'm actively like out of the way. And so it's dragging me away from something else. And I find my brain is great at that. It's great at distracting me from what I'm doing. So if I do something else, it'll distract me with great story ideas. If I sit at the story ideas, it distracts me with, you know, Facebook or something stupid.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting sort of, like, you can't make, and you want to, and you think you can, but you can't make those snap moments happen.
No. Yeah.
It's frustrating as hell sometimes, but you've got to have, I don't know, I've gotten to a point now where I'm like, I'll have faith, I'll get there. Yeah. Like, it's, I was sitting there with some story notes the other night, and I'd just written, like, in big three-line tall font, like, what is this story about? I've got the story beats, I've got the, you know, I've got the character hook, and I've got all of these things, but I can't work out a theme. Now that I've got it laid out, I'm like, but what's really turning behind the story? And I had it on like a, I have like a little chest sort of coffee table in my office. So I turn around and I'd look at it, and I was like, no. And I turn back and I'd type this other thing that I'm doing, and I keep spinning in my chair, and that wasn't happening. And I went to bed, and I laid in bed, and I was stewing on it. And then I sort of half dreamed about it, and I got up, and I'm sitting there with my coffee and breakfast, and I'm like, ugh. And then one of the kids needed me to do something. And as I'm doing it, I was like, I think I've got it. And so I'm like, I quickly wrote down like a little line and I'm like, oh, it's nearly there. And then, yeah, I'm in the shower and bang, it finally came to me. Like, this story is about this. And I'm like, oh, finally. And all I needed to do was tweak a few little plot points, like just motivation behind certain character movements. And then it all made sense. But yeah, it took me like a good, you know, 18 awesome. Hours of just leaving it behind. And I mean, that's a good turnaround. I've had, there's a story, Sammy Cavella and I are pitching at the moment, and that's actually sitting with a publisher at the moment waiting for contracts. And I broke ground on that story probably 2.5 years ago, but I could never get it to matter. I could get the story to go from, you know, act 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5,
yeah,
there was no real like wrenching heart behind it. And so I constantly knew no matter how much I broke the story and it worked, it didn't matter. So I kept pushing it away. And then finally, like, I got it. And it was like 2 years later, I was like, oh, I get where this story's really moving. And it took a bunch of turns then and went to some pretty wild places. And then that's when I approached Sammy finally. So yeah, sometimes it's an 18 hour shift. And then sometimes it's like, put it in the trunk for 2 years and every now and then glance back and be like, what is in here? Oh, okay. Dust something off and, you know, your brain works on it. Your brain, it's a crazy, crazy machine in there. Like,
there's a lot to be said about getting space as well from, you know, you can't see the wood for the trees sometimes. I mean, I've been dabbling at prose stuff recently, you know, and I know where things are going to go, but when you're just writing in one hit and you hit that sort of creative wall and you're thinking, you know, I could write through it, but I wouldn't be happy with anything that's going through. And I'm just thinking of that thing that's going to solve it. So I step away from it for a few days, come back. I think, right, I'm going to try writing this again. And I hit it, and all of a sudden it just hits, you know, it just comes to you in one hit, and then you move on, and then you're really happy, and it just keeps the enthusiasm. I think if you keep smashing your head against a brick wall when trying to write or create or anything, you're not doing anyone any good.
You're going to mess your face up,
I don't mean physically.
Oh, wait, what?
Negative space. All wrong.
We
reviewed that on the show, I think it was a month or so ago, maybe a bit longer. But that was just absolutely fantastic. But the story was so bleak. It was real kind of, it was a real downer, that one. What was the your themes and kind of thought processes when you came up with that one?
The very first impetus was that first page. It was the writer sitting there at the desk trying to write the suicide note and getting writer's block. That's all I had initially. Mm. And I was like, that sucks. Unlucky dude. So I wrote it down and then I started noodling with it. And the big thread that I pulled was like, you know, it becomes a why does this matter sort of thing. I was like, but okay, so he goes for a walk to clear his head, as we all would when we get writer's block. Mm. What's the bigger picture? And the moment I cracked the idea of somebody wants that suicide note, I was like, oh, why? What would they do with it? Who are they? And then you dive down that burrow and you're like, what are they doing in there? But what would they do with a note? Why are they? Oh, so there's like, there's power in depression. Oh, there's like, well, what would they be doing with then the depression? Oh, there's like ancient arcane creatures and they feed upon emotions. Oh, and they like depression the best. Oh, okay. And then I started like going down that road and it was like, it was probably a good week or two where I was just noodling about it. And whenever I break a story, I'll write the heading. I initially it was to be called Low. That was its original title. But then Remenda came out with a book called Low and completely dicked me over. Thank you to Remenda and Greg Tattini. So I write Low and then I'm like, all right, so this guy's got, you know, can't write a suicide note. Where? What are we going to do? You know, and then I eventually get the Kindred Corp and then I work out, you know, the Evora, and then you slowly go down there. And initially my first, like, five drafts of the story, like they had some wild action set pieces. They had like they had guy in a helicopter battling one of the Evora, flying towards you know how Google has like big data banks that live on the water, and the water underneath turns all the turbines that keep them powered. They're like these big like information farms, basically.
I didn't know that.
At least I think that's true. Maybe I made it up.
If you did make it up, that's one hell of an idea for a story.
I'm taking it, yeah. Well, my idea was that, you know, the Kindred Corp had that, like, this big emotional store out on the water, and it was just chock full of depression. And again, it's sci-fi, so I don't have to explain how it gets in there, because we're reading a story not to get a science lesson but to enjoy a narrative. So there's this, like, depression farm being powered by the, you know, the waves underneath, and the Evora will come up and, like, you know, suckle from it every now and then. And Gaia's going to fly a helicopter into it. So he's in there, and he's battling with this Evora, and then he, like, dives out, and the helicopter smashes in. There's this giant, like, explosion, and there's, like, seven Michael Bay helicopters filming it. It's going to be epic. And I had this big set piece. And then, like, the Evora comes out of the flaming water and comes for him, and he's trying to swim away. But, yeah, it was going to be, like, real nasty, and it drags him under. That was, like, a big, I think, turning point at the end of issue three. And that, like, nothing like that happens in the book at all. Like, we totally changed the story. We changed the tone. We didn't go so action-y. Because he wasn't going to be, like, you know, tearing people's throats out, Swayze and, you know, Roadhouse style.
Roadhouse,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't going to be that cool. But, those were early drafts of the story. And so eventually, you know, getting picked up at Dark Horse was, like, the best thing that could have happened for that book, because I started working with Daniel Chabon, editing the book. And he is phenomenal. He had so many good ideas, like, not ideas, but, like, questions and thoughts about things. And he's really good about the way he edits. Right? He'll be like, well, could this go this way? Why would Guy do this? What's his purpose for getting there? And I'm like, oh yeah, maybe it is more of a narrative choice than a character choice. Oh, and the amount of times he would just say, like, look, read the email, take a day, think about it. You know, you might come back with the answer, or you might come back with a new solution. But, you know, he was really good about that. He was, he's a huge reason that book is as good as it is. Obviously, as equal a reason as Owen Gianni and his amazing art, because his line work and colors in that book are
ridiculous.
Phenomenal. So emotional. Like,
yeah.
Him and I had just done a two-page short backup for Shudder, Lila DeLuca and Joe Keating's book at Image, because Owen and I have been chatting for years, and so we'd just done this two-pager, and then I got Negative Space picked up at Dark Horse, and they were like, you know, I got picked up without an artist. And they're like, well, you know, Shabon's like, well, do you know any artists? Like, we can at least look in your sphere. And I was like, oh, yeah, I just did two pages with Owen and sent him in. And he's like, all right, artist hunt closed. Get him on the phone. Let's make this happen. And I was like, oh, cool. Sweet. So, you know, I brought Owen in, and he was the first and only choice, really, for the book, and thankfully could do it. And he did. He just sort of, like, brought such, like, real heart to the book, like, breaking heart. I couldn't imagine the book any other way. And so, like, and it was interesting to initially conceive the book and not have the art. And then the moment we brought him in, I was, like, getting character sketches and, locations. He drew locations. And then even as the first pages came in, and I was like, oh, okay, I can see how we can play with this, you know, in future issues, and started tweaking the scripts a little bit. And,
yeah, I was going to say, did his art inform your writing going forward as soon as, like, he came on board?
Yeah, the moment you got him, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to have Guy, like, swim down into the Evora, like, abyss, and then there's going to be this creature. And if you read the script page, it's like, hey, Owen, I want you to draw a big, messed up creature. You know how you've been drawing him already? Just go weirder. And he was like, sweet, yeah, he's on it. and he gets that big, like, weird, like, I think I sent him a video clip to a vampire squid thing and something else. And he was just like, I got this. And then send in the thumbnail, and I'm like, yeah, you do. You do have this. Like, he smashed it. And so, yeah, it was one of those books where, I mean, we got picked up at the end of 2014 and didn't launch for another, like, 7 months. So we had a lot of, like, prep time and a lot of time for me to really, like, smash the scripts around with Chabon and think about Owen and bring it all together. And yeah, it was a really, like, to think that its inception was just this guy sitting at a table, just unable to write the note, to draw the story out that we did in the end, was really pleasing. Like, it's nice to know that we stuck the landing with the ending, where, like, my no matter what the draft was, my idea always was, this isn't a story about curing his depression and suicidal tendencies.
Yeah.
because that's just a huge.
That's a bigger subject to deal with, isn't it? That's not something you can just sort of say, oh yes, and this happens, and he's fine now.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it does such a disservice to everyone in the real world who suffers from those problems. And I was really adamant this isn't a story of us just being like, and now he feels better. You know, he's him and Woody are happy together, and he killed some aliens, and now he's totally amazing. Like, that would be
that could never
the
work.
Rankest thing to do. Yeah, so. Always I was thinking, like, well, you take this character, what's actually the worst thing you could do? Because then a lot of people, as soon as we launched, they were like, oh, I bet he just kills himself at the end. I don't need to read this book. And I was like, I think you need to read this book. I think we've got worse. We can do worse to a guy than actually let him go through with this. And I could even say that online and people still couldn't figure out what was going to happen because, I mean, yeah, well, what we did to him in the end was terrible.
Yeah,
I mean,
terrible.
You know, realistically, what's the worst thing you could do to someone who doesn't want to live is make them live, like enforce it, not allow them to find a way to live, but to force them to have to. Like, it's once Dan and I really cracked that ending, it was like, oh, this is going to be great. And then you look at the way Owen draws, like he's sitting in that white room with like his head in his hands, and you can see. Like Rick's like a dead body with the blood streak where he's dragged him off, just sort of like in the reflection. Like, it's such an emotionally charged panel, and it was sort of gut wrenching to write, but I felt good about it. I was like, all right, I feel like this narrative is going to mean something. I feel like there's, you know, something to speak to here. We're still getting to the point of the story, and there's still truth to be put forward. I mean, when the first issue launched, the amount of like emails and things I got from people that were like, oh, look, dude, I'm depressed. Or this one guy was like, look, I'm probably about the same size and shape as Guy. I'm a homosexual male who has had suicidal ideations. And he goes, you are writing this fantastically well. He goes, you are really getting truth on the page. And the moment I got that email, I was like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
This book is just one for me. Like, that's the best possible feedback, because you don't want to write that wrong or distasteful or untrue, or use it as a selling point and not a character arc. Yeah. So
if you're going to deal with serious sort of, like, especially psychological or health issues, anything like that, you have to you have to treat it with respect. It can't just be this guy's sick at the beginning. By the end, he gets get better. You know, you have to really look into the subject as well, don't you?
Yeah, it becomes like a thing where, like, you know, I did research and I read things, and you know, my wife is like a counselor and has had training in that area, and you know, I obviously as a teacher deal somewhat with a multitude of sort of, you know, mental health issues at work and ways to deal with it and just getting an insight into it. So yeah, I really wanted to tell a story that mattered. And I talk about that a lot to people where I'm like, that's what I want. I want stories when and where I can that will matter. And so even with, like, Headspace, with Eric Zawadzki, as well as Sebastian Perez and Marissa Louise and D. Canafon Colors, that was a book where I was like, well, I still want it to be about something. It's very high concept. There is a lot of action in there, but I still want it to be about, like, gray morality and hard choices and a fatherhood subplot and things like that. So I don't know. I think people connect with a story that has something behind it, even if it's not your life story. It doesn't have to be. Like, you can read a story about somebody who's having marital problems, and you can be a single person, and it can still impact you. Like, it's just about, like, it just having something real on the page, and to be able to do that with, like, wild, weird, underwater Cronenberg type Philip K. Dick monsters. It is a hard balance. Like,
I was going to say that, like, you started off with that initial sort of, like, the suicide note. Where can I go from that? It didn't take you long to delve into arcane creatures, which says a lot about you, I think.
Oh, completely. Yeah. If any sort of if my wife was to read Negative Space and analyze me, you know, she would be committing me. She'd be able to sign the papers.
See your eyes flick up over the top of the book and look at you.
And reach for the phone.
Like, honey, why does my copy have all these post-it notes in it? Like, what are you writing in there? Yeah. Big butterfly net goes over me. We got it. It's terrible. But, I mean, like, and even then, like, you can write stuff that's just, that's a lark. I've got no problem with that. I think even writing stuff that's a lark, will the best stuff will still have a kernel of an emotion behind it, or a why does this matter sort of hook to it.
Ever written a character that was just an evil character, bad character, and ever been concerned about the opinions they espouse reflecting badly on you as a writer?
Not only do I worry, that actually has happened. I was writing a miniseries called Ghost Town at Action Lab, their Danger Zone imprint, and there's a very racist character in that book. And being the writer I am, I tried to write him quite authentically. And word got back to me that a certain person assumed I was a racist because of the way I wrote the character, which I find, yeah. I mean, and it's not like he was the heroic lead. No. He was very clearly the villain. And I subscribe to the theory, you're not necessarily every single thing you write. You can't be. How can you be the villain? Like, the villain may have shades of you, but I mean, this guy didn't. He was a bomb. He was he was a woeful piece of
flesh. Because that always concerns me, that where people kind of take that, what you've written as a character, as a reflection on you as a writer, because otherwise you're going to end up with these safe characters that are non-threatening.
Mm. Well, that's the thing, yeah.
If they can never be edgy and never say something that you wouldn't say, it's straight away you're capping them, and it's not real.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. You can't. You can only go like comically evil.
Yeah.
Twisting mustaches.
Yeah. If the writer is like their characters, then Garth Ennis must be the most terrifying man on the face of the planet.
I can only imagine. All I can picture with him before he writes a character is that scene in the South Park, one of the episodes of the movie with Christopher Reeve, tears the head off the baby and sucks out the stem cells. He's like, that's Garth Ennis writing a script. He's just like, probably just getting some drunk wino though, and just like, stem cells, just getting into it. And then he writes like four issues that night.
Bret Easton Ellis, he's kind of like quite a straight kind of 9-to-5 guy, and he got investigated after writing American Psycho. And it's like, he
did a pretty convincing job of writing that book.
Yeah, he did a really convincing job.
Yeah. But even then, like, it's fiction, I think. If you wrote, like, a Donald Trump-type character, I mean, first of all, people would say you're a terrible writer because that character could never exist in the real world.
Yeah.
But then, like, that doesn't need to be your ideology, and nor do you need to make it, like, I don't know, purely evil characters, I find it a little boring. Like, if you look at Rick in A Negative Space, the head agent that we follow through the Kindred Corp, and he's trying to, his mission, his at least, not his mission, his job, the file that's on his desk is to make Guy kill himself, and he's going to then extract the suicide note. It's a terrible thing to do. And when you meet Rick, he is an absolute cock. Mm. Like, he's so arrogant and so full of it. And I loved writing him initially, because man, he's fun to write. He says whatever's on his head. He's like a sort of douchebag real estate agent type, but with this weird emotion sucking business. And to write his character arc, where at the end, and he's basically like, look, if I don't do this, these monsters are going to come up. If I don't treat this job like it's a lark, this job is going to kill me. Like, this is my defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Was really cool. Was really cool to turn it around. And by the time I planned that, but then I didn't let myself explore it too much, so that when I wrote him early, I could write him. Like, we all hated him.
Yeah.
Well, hate that guy.
It's the cabin in the woods theory as well, isn't it? What they're doing is awful, but if you think about why they're doing it to save the world. Do you know what I mean?
And if you're given that task, you have to build some distance to it. And when you finally, I love that one. I had to say that I love my own work so much, but I love that one. Like, Rick, like, you get that arc closure at the end where he's like, "This is my gig, and I do it for the greater good. And if I didn't, look at what would happen."
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I guess spoilers. If somebody hasn't read Negative Space by now, shame on you. but then at the end, Guy is pretty much just like, yeah, don't care, shoot yourself in the head. Just does it anyway. And I wanted to do that because that's the human reaction. And you look at a Civil War movie where at the end, Tony Stark's still trying to get Bucky.
Mm.
And Steve Rogers is like, he didn't know it was him at that time. And he's like, don't care. I'm so emotional right now. I don't care. And that's such a real thing. You see people do it all the time where they're like, I don't care. I need to hit something. I don't care. My logical brain will know that this wasn't real, but right now.
And the thing is, that was done so well. Reaction. That was such a simple, you know, he killed my mum. Do you know what I mean? It's that sort of like, you just like, well, I can understand why he wants to do that. Do you know what I mean?
It's a real based emotion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen Civil War.
Civil War.
Wow, Jesus, shame on you. I mean, go see that before you read my piddly books. Come on, people.
It's interesting. I saw a video, I think, week before last, and it was breaking down a scene in The Terminator, the gunfight in Tech Noir. And I didn't realize the sequence in that where the Terminator goes to hose down Reese with some bullets, and he grabs a guy that's running past and uses him as a human shield. And so I'd never spotted that before. But again, the same sort of justification. He's fighting for the future of mankind.
That's right. So yeah, this dude's got to take bullets. To be fair, if you're a dude just hanging out at Tech Noir, you deserve a few speed holes put in you. You dance faster. Or maybe that's just me not feeling the vibe of that scene. I don't know. That's not my place to hang out.
I remember a similar thing happening in Total Recall when Douglas Quaid is trying to escape on an escalator.
Oh, yeah.
And there's loads of bad guys. But the thing is, he's not saving the world. He just pulls an innocent bloke into the line of fire and he gets turned into paint. Brilliant scene.
But that's the fact in that bit. One minute he's a construction worker, next minute he's just an absolutely like... emotionless killer of men who just takes no pause whatsoever in what he's doing.
I love that film.
Are you telling me you couldn't just switch it off one night and become an emotionless killer?
Oh, Dan is a sociopath. You know the TV series Dexter? That was based on Dan Butcher. Anyway.
I'm not alone. I feel so great now. That's good.
Oh, we're all sociopaths on this show.
Nice.
Yeah, and this won't get edited out. Now, we've talked about Negative Space, but your current project, Dear Editor, the third book of which is just finished on Kickstarter, it's got a few days left, if I...
Like 4 days, probably 3 days at this stage, yeah. Yeah, it's right in the home stretch.
Yeah, it's successful, rightfully so, and we'll get into
it. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't take the piss with your... sort of rewards, and people get a lot of value for money on this Kickstarter. I think it's obvious why that's been successful. But Dear Editor, the idea when you say it is kind of crazy, but not. So for those out there who don't know about Dear Editor, pitch it to us. What is it?
Right, so Dear Editor is about the editor of a crime beat at a newspaper. And he's also a deer with, you know, antlers. So the way I sort of say it is, it's especially the first issue, it's very much like Polanski's Chinatown if Nicholson had antlers. Sort of all you need to know.
Yeah.
It's like the book that it's the one thing I feel like, I could have done something this terrible. Only I could have come up with this idea. Like, you really feel like this is my book. I love it. I love writing it. I love working with Sammy on it. And it's such a personal book, which is why I kind of like that we kickstarted it, because you get that personal connection to the readership.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool, and to be, you know, on our third time on the carousel, and each time we've been sort of exponentially more successful than the last, it's really cool. We can honestly say we've built a readership and grown a readership. I think that's really cool. Like the first one we did, we got a bit over $2,000, like $2,300, and then the next one we got like $3,300 or whatever, and now we've just cracked $4,000 for this one. So yeah, we're constantly getting up there. I mean, we're coming up with new ideas, but also our back account is constantly growing. We went from like, I think, 320 to 340, and now we've just cracked over 400 backers. Nice. Which I did look actually earlier, and I think it puts us out of all the Kickstarter campaigns that are currently live in the comic book section.
Of which there are many.
We have the most backers out of any of the ones that are live, and I take a lot of pride in that. Like, and it's not a thing that we're ever going to say like we'll make the most money. We offer the comic at a $1 download. We were never going to make like $90,000. You would need to sell Walking Dead numbers to get that much in there. So it was never, it's never been about the money that we end up with, like that number count. Although I want it to be high so that I can pay Sammy, obviously. That's the main crux of each campaign. Sammy draws the issue up front, and then we we get him some coin at the end and have every time. But it's just been getting the backers in, and yeah, like we're well up there, which is really humbling, to be honest. Like it's a goofy idea, you know, a journalist who's a deer, like, you know, why should people care? Yeah. But for me, like coming up with it, it was really important that we set him in the real world, and that we, and I mean, once I clicked, and it was very early in the piece, once I clicked, you know, he's the crime editor, we're going to investigate, you know, some shady characters, and that's going to be the tone. Oh, it just ran with itself. It was great.
I love the fact that it's a crazy idea that's treated as just part of the world. It just is.
Yeah.
There's no sort of like, this is a world where all of these things exist. This is, you know, there's no back matter. It's just, you just dropped in and, oh yes, he just happens to be a deer. And once you roll with that, you know, you're in for good times, aren't you? I think it says a lot about the book as well, that you are growing that readership. It says a lot about the quality of the book, because at the moment we're living in almost a Kickstarter overload. Because there's more and more, there's more and more comics Kickstarters all over the shop. I mean, I think September the 1st, there was like God knows how many went live on that day.
Yeah,
and you can't pledge to them all, but also people who are coming back for their issue twos, their issue threes, they see their numbers drop off.
Yeah.
So to have a Kickstarter where it's growing, I think it speaks volumes to the actual book itself.
Yeah, thanks. And yeah, it's one of those things where I was worried that, you know, oh, okay, we made this much in the first round. What's going to happen for the second one? Because people don't like to, you know, the one thing we did do for the second issue, which was Dear Editor Fearless, was it was initially Dear Editor number two. And I was chatting to Tyler James at Comics Tribe, who runs the Comics Launch podcast, which is a phenomenal resource for anybody thinking about launching Kickstarters about comics. And he just sort of said to me, like, straight up, he's like, dude, drop the two. He's like, you don't use number two, because people go, oh, I missed one, and they will scroll past. And I honestly believe he was right with that. So we changed the title of the campaign to Dear Editor Fearless. And then we're very open in the campaign. This is issue two. You know, the first one's sort of a one shot anyway. So, you know, but we're selling number one and it's all digital. And I mean, and you say, like, you know, how many campaigns are live and how many of us launched in that first like 48 hours of September? But if everyone offers a cheap digital option, you can back all the good ones that are there. Like, that's my belief. Like, that's why I'm really staunch. Because the other thing Tyler said to me was, and I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying this, is that he was like, dude, don't sell the issue for a dollar. He's like, it's worth more than that. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to buy it for more. I believe in dollar downloads. Like, if it's a $2 comic on Comixology, my finger lifts above the mouse. I don't know if I'm going to do it. Like, and if I'm thinking that, and I know what it takes to make comics, and I know how, like, I love comics, what's another reader going to be like? And so I was like, nah, look, I'm going to do it. And each campaign we offer the dollar, it's shocking how many people don't end up taking that option. They go up to $3 and they get the gigantic PDF full of script and back matter and pinups and everything. Or they go even higher. They get the script PDF at $7.
If you think about it like this, you've got 400 backers. If all of those were just $1, you wouldn't be where you are.
True.
No. Yeah, that's the thing. And the first campaign we ran, I was like, I only asked for $1,000, but I was like, look, if everybody just takes the comic for a dollar, I'm going to need 1,000 of you. And not a lot of campaigns get 1,000 backers.
No.
So it seemed like a gimme, but I was sweating when I launched. Okay, whereas, you know, launching this latest one, I mean, you still get the sweats, but I was like, oh, I'm sure we'll fund. But then you don't really, we're chasing, what, 2,000 this time. You still... I'd never believe her a certainty, especially because the second issue was only earlier this year. You worry about, like, you know, burning your readership out. But no, like, the first one took us, I think, 25 hours to fund. The second issue we were funded in about 12 hours, and this one we were funded in under 7.
Brilliant.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, it was, you know, I again, listened to Tyler, and instead of just launching the Kickstarter and then starting to talk about it, I let people know in advance. I had a fortnight in my calendar mapped out for between when we launched and when I got back from a family trip in Europe. And so we flew in from Paris on Wednesday middle of the day, and I knew that night I was going to launch the advertising sort of campaign for Dear Editor Hack. I knew what I was going to put on my site. I'd already written it before I went to Europe. I'd written a bunch of material before I went to Europe, and then I could just post, all right, here's a post about the pinup artist, here's a post about the script PDF and about the audio commentary that we offer and things like that. And I just had this fortnightly battle plan of here's what's going to go up every day. And I'm going to have a pinup, so it's visual. I'm going to have a link, so there's this. There's going to be a pinup, so it's visual. And just sort of had it so that no one could escape the fact the Kickstarter was coming.
Yeah.
Because you will still get people, and every campaign I've had so far, they finish, and then 4 days later, someone's like, oh, this looks cool. How'd I miss it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. Like, what were you doing for a month when I, like, pestered everybody? So, it's one of those things
from Dear Editor, you've gone for like a tablet style view with a page size.
Yes.
What kind of brought you towards doing that?
Oh, I think, it was looking at the DC Digital stuff, I think.
Hmm.
I think it was that, and reading Injustice initially, which was written by another Aussie, Tom Taylor, and just seeing how I really loved that with doing digital tablet pages like that, you've constantly, every swipe is a page turn.
Mm.
And doing it that way, instead of in a book, you have to do two pages of art before you get the page turnover. Those two pages become four page turns on a tablet. And so you're constantly building to these little things. So structurally, I map out the comic as 48 tablet pages, and that's, 47 page turns. But then I also map it out as a read in the book so that every fourth tablet page turn is like the biggest page turn. Like, oh, I've really got to turn the page now. Mm-hmm. So, it was really, I think it was the DC stuff that I was looking at, but I don't know. I like reading. Oh, it could have been. There was another book, Moth City by Tim. Ah, I'm going to be annoyed that I can't remember his name now. He's a Kiwi guy. And Moth City is phenomenal. It's that tablet page format, but it's like Mark Waid was doing with Thrill Bent, where you sort of swipe and the panel reveals, and swipe and panel reveals, and he does some amazing stuff with Moth City. It's really cool. And I think reading that was a big sort of Tim Gibson. There you go. I just looked up my email. Sorry, Tim. Tim Gibson. Yeah, Moth City. So like stuff like that. I was like, oh. You know, if I'm obviously going to go digital only on the Kickstarter because I just cannot afford to ship to people. Like postage out of Australia, you would think we were sending it out on the first fleet. So expensive.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. So I was like, well, I'm not going to do a print copy because I'd have to charge people like $15 for an issue and I don't want to do that.
And that kills a lot of people as well in Kickstarter. Oh, yeah. It really does kill them.
Yeah. So I was like, no, I'm going to price this at what I honestly believe, things are worth. And ultimately, if you don't like any of the other prices, you have a dollar. Just give me a dollar and you can have the book. Like I think that's more than fair. And so I wish more Kickstarters did that. Because I've openly said to people, if I click on your Kickstarter link and the first pledge is $5 for a PDF of your 22-page comic, I'm closing the tab. Like, I'm out.
The thing, I'm interested to see what you think of this, actually. When you open up a Kickstarter and it's either, whether it be dollars or pounds, where it's either one or two, the first pledge is, we'll just say thank you. And that's it.
Oh, man.
Some of the times they don't even say they'll say thank you. It's just...
No, it's like, we'll
just know that it's really good.
Yeah.
You're helping us make comics, so cheers. And I'm like, and you know what's funny? Every time I click on a Kickstarter that has one of those, guess how many people have chosen that pledge level? None. Yeah. So all that you've managed to do is when I scroll down, the first thing I see is, oh, no one wants your stuff. And I've got to scroll further to see anything that I do want. I always come off sounding like a really arrogant prat when I talk about Kickstarter. But... I hate those dollars. Like, we'll give you a shout out on Twitter. Why do I care?
Yeah.
You have like 400 followers. Go and stop. Just give me the book. Give me the book. Like, and give it to me at a price that I would pay on like Comixology, or I would pay through someone's Big Cartel or whatever. I'll get a lot of people that will sort of say, oh, do you want to look over my campaign? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I love Kickstarter. I think it's such a big movement in the industry that we can just, we can make our books, man. You can grow a Dear Editor. You can grow a readership for a dumb idea like Dear Editor. If you can do that, like, that shows that the platform works. And so I'll look at people's campaigns and I'm like, get rid of that thank you pledge. It's blocking prime position.
Yeah.
You want that first thing to be something decent. And just stop putting $5 on your PDF. Like, that's highway robbery. Like, put this into context. Would you go to Comixology and pay $5 for a single issue of anything? No. You'd pay $5 for, like, Raina Thalgemeier's graphic novel. That's what you'd pay $5 for.
Yeah.
You've got a 22-page issue. No, don't do it, sort of thing. So, no, I'm always pretty firm about those things. And it's interesting then to see people that are like, nah, I want to make heaps of money. I'm going to leave it at $5.
No,
and they end up successfully funded, but usually with about 50 backers.
Yeah,
because a few friends picked up like the $80 pledges or whatever.
Yeah,
it's totally counterproductive to what you want to do. Like I was very firm. I would rather have like an extra 50 people get in on the dollar pledge and make $50, like gain 50 readers.
Exactly. Yeah.
That will hopefully come back for more. Because I've had people then like message me and be like, this looks cool. What else you got? Or, you know, they backed the first one. And then when the second one came around, they're like, oh, sweet. You know, you did Negative Space yet? You got any links? Can I like pick up the trade or whatever?
Because of your stretch goals and stuff, as soon as people get in on the $1 and then it's successful, you know, you're someone to be like, right, as we've made this stretch goal, you now get a PDF of this issue. You get this, you know, there's a brilliant essay you did about Daredevil. You're just throwing content at people. Mm. And all they've had to do is just pledge $1. You know.
Yeah, that's another thing where I do feel like that's like an important aspect. You've got to reward them for backing you. Because I think some people flick their Kickstarter where they're like, no, you should be giving more to the charity of me to make my comic. And I'm like, no, you stepped up and pledged for me. I'm going to hook you up. So, like, if you backed this campaign on the first day, you would have gotten the first issue of Chum, because we offered that in the first 24 hours for all backers. And we got, like, over 100 backers in that day. So that was great. A bunch of people just tried Chum. Once we were 100% funded, you got, like, the Daredevil book of essays that I wrote and edited through SecArt, who are fantastic. And it was a dream writing a book about Daredevil with a bunch of other really smart essayists in there. And then as we've gone along, you've been able to get, like, a short comic from Sammy, another essay that I sort of designed up and put together in a PDF. We just hit $4,000. So we've unlocked the 6-word newsletter noir option for readers, where they can submit a 6-word story sort of based loosely around the idea of what newspaper noir could be. And we'll include it in the $3 PDF. And so I'm constantly trying to think, well, what can we give? Because, you know, I'm the one that needs to be thankful. These people are coming here and buying my stuff. Like, that's still, like, I find that insane. Like, it's wild that somebody would be like, yeah, let's get in on this Dear Editor action, and beyond a dollar, like, people that are pledging $10 and $20. Like, that's really cool. I owe them. Like, they're backing me, and they're tweeting it out there, and they're putting it out there. Like, these people are insane, and they're cool. And so I figure, well, I shouldn't just sit back and be like, you're damn straight, maybe I'll send you a tweet later saying thanks. Like, bullshit. Get out there and give them some stuff. Yeah. Like, no, I wish I could give them more. I wish I could start giving them, like, you know, the Dark Horse PDFs and stuff like that, but legally I don't know where I stand. I put together a PDF of all the covers, like the cover art, and did a little commentary on each one, and that was one of the stretch goals, and just things like that. Just always think about it is, like, if, like, Matt Fraction is a creator I love, right? I love. Mm-hmm. If he ran a Kickstarter and he had, like, an audio commentary for $20, I'd give him 30. Like, I would be all over it. And so I figure, like, I am no Matt Fraction, but if anyone sort of digs my stuff or digs me, you know, you might enjoy that sort of thing. People know I like to, as I'm doing right now, for an hour talk rubbish about, like, comics and process. And so if people want to get in on that, well, obviously they can, but again, they don't have to. Dollar pledge will get you the book. But it's that sort of thing where I was like, man, if I dug a creator, like if Ryan Ferrier did another Tiger Lawyer, which was a huge inspiration for Dear Editor. Yeah. If he did another Tiger Lawyer campaign and he offered an audio commentary, I'd be there. Like, that's awesome. Like, of course I would be there. Like, I would, I mean, I love Ryan Ferrier. He's a mate. I could probably just Skype him and hear him talk, but I would want to support him, and I would want to hear what he has to say about things. Like, you want to give, like, what you hope some semblance of readership would like. And yeah, the $20 audio commentary, which I, to be honest, I came up with that. I initially, it was a radio drama for the first issue. And then I switched to audio commentary because the radio drama was really hard to do. I really didn't anticipate how useless I would be.
You did a radio drama of the first issue of Dear Editor.
I did. It was terrible. Because I tried to do voices. Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Yeah, what's this ear? Oh, I'm like, oh, cut.
Did that take so longer bad. Than writing the actual book?
Oh, probably. Oh, man. The amount of times I was like, I'd say to my wife, like, look, can you take the kids out for the afternoon? I need to get on this. And she is a lovely human and angel. And she would be like, all right. And she'd be gone for 4 hours and she'd come back and she's just like, how did it go? And I'm like crying. I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. I love all these people. And the biggest fear was, what if one person pledged and I had to do all of it for like $20? Yeah. Oh, man. I was sweating on that. I'm just like, please, please. Please, please don't let me do this for $20 because it took hours. I have no idea what I'm doing, and it was rubbish. And I felt so bad that, like, I couldn't offer it again.
No, I think there's creators, we've come up with content thinking, oh, we can do this. It's a great way to kind of provide some content that's quite quick. It's like, there's a lot of it, and then you start working on it, and you think, fucking hell, this is a lot of work. It's actually a lot of work.
So I was just like the walking epitome of Job in Arrested Development. I was like, I've made a big mistake.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
I say we were quite fortunate to get you, Ryan, because you've just been not put forward, but announced by the DC Comic Writers Workshop. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I know you've known for a couple of weeks, but it's literally just come out a few days ago here, isn't it? Or is it a week?
Yeah, it was announced like 3-4 days ago. Oh.
Congratulations, by the way. Yes, that's well fantastic. Done.
Thank you. I'm still stymied as to why I was chosen. I think it was a typo and they wanted like another Ryan, but they got the wrong email.
Ryan so D. Like, Lindsay.
Well, no, don't joke, because on the DC blog, they announced it and they spelt my name horribly wrong with multiple typos. And I was like, oh, wait, do they mean another Ryan Lindsay?
Yeah.
And I was waiting for some other, like, Ryan Lindsay with the typos to, like, be like, yeah, I'm in. And I was like, oh, no, come on, man, come on.
You've got to appreciate the irony, though, that the announcement for a writer's workshop has a spelling error.
Yeah. Same thing with Duncan Fregredo on the 2000 AD thing. They spelled his name horribly wrong.
Oh, really?
He tweeted a sad face. Said, oh, no.
Yeah, you got to be careful with those things. But no, I found out a little while ago, and then like we had to sit on it, and then it was announced. And it's a huge opportunity. Like I believe every single writer I know applied for it. Like I can't think of many who honestly didn't. Mm. And there were many names better than me that I honestly believe should like be like the aforementioned Ryan Ferrier should have been in there. Paul Aller, there's a good bad one, should have been in there. John Lee's just done work in Comics Tribe, is an amazing like just thought engine guy. He gets narrative. He's so sharp. And I think about all these sharp people that didn't make it, and then the blunt old Australian me got in. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, I'm gonna have to really like represent. And so I'm beyond stoked. Like one thing I realized is like, I'm obviously completely shit scared. Like it's such a big step up. This isn't some Kickstarter that I could actually just legally take the money and not deliver. Like, no. It's nothing like that. Like you have to like, I mean, the whole point is if you don't do well, survivor style, they'll snuff out your flame.
Yeah.
Be gone. Be dead and you'll never work in this town again. That's what they said. We will salt the earth with the ashes of your tears. It's like, oh, God.
And so, wash out that prefix on your name every time.
Yeah, essentially, if you just run into like DC's Running Man, is it just like the Running Man? You just got to run for your life, and then whichever writer survives at the end,
climbing for Batman scripts, and at the top they just spray you anyway. It's so now it's like this big step up, and I was like, oh, okay. But what I've realized is, I'm so excited. Like my excitement levels have overridden any fear or lack of talent. I'm just I just logged in and was chatting to the editors, and it was just like, you guys have seen Mad Max Fury Road, right?
Yeah.
I was like, one of the Chrome boys was just like, whoa! Spraying my face and stuff. It's rats and Batman.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, okay, you're doing it. It's like, wow, this is... should have gone
with other Ryan Lindsay. Christ, get Ryan deep on the call. But no, I'm like, I'm super excited to do it because, I mean, how often do you get an opportunity like this? The first time I've seen a big publisher, like, I can remember years ago, I don't know if you guys would remember this, it was probably around 06 or 07 or 08, Comic Book Resources did the Comic Book Idol. I think it was only for artists, but they had like this Comic Book Idol thing where they were like, all right, this week's challenge is you've got to draw a page involving like Spidey and Green Goblin, and all these artists that were involved in it would draw this page, and that would be critiqued and the public could vote on it. From memory, Paul Wilson III was winner or runner-up. And there was one other really good guy that was in there. And yeah, they eliminated people every week. And I remember like one watching that and being like, could you do this for writers? And two, just being like, when will something like this happen? And on a level like DC doing it, nothing like that has ever come along. There's been some really great like anthology opportunities and things like that crop up for some great small press stuff. But to get into one of the big two through something like this, like just the fact that they opened it up, I was like, this is such a crazy process.
With
like,
that in mind,
and no wonder everyone went for it.
Yeah, with that in mind, how did you find out about it, and then how did you submit?
Word of mouth, it popping up online. Like, I don't think anyone missed the news. And then I took they announced it, and then it was for the writers. It wasn't even open for months, but you could see what they wanted. And so I just started getting things in order. And so you had to write a composition about yourself, which I believe Americans do like to get into uni or something, but we don't do that down here. And I was like, what am I supposed to be writing? And it was like, dear diary, I write comics. Pretty cool. Like, I had no idea what to do. It was just a really strange, because it wasn't necessarily an application. It wasn't like, I've written job applications as a teacher, and you're like, I have these skill sets. I would use them like this in your school. Here's why you should hire me. So it was kind of like I was floating around. I didn't know what to do. And, I ran it past some different people. There's like a little sort of brains trust of a few of us, a comics tribe, who chat a lot, like John Lees, I mentioned, and Tyler, and a few other blokes. And, so I sort of ran it past them. I was like, you know, am I even in the right sphere? What am I doing? So that was an interesting writing process. And then you had to pick like two works to send in. And you could send in like finished comics, like a PDF. So I actually I took ages trying to work out what I should send in, because you're trying to figure out what would they be looking for? You know what? And not that I've written a plethora of things, but I have enough that I could choose from it. And I was like, well, okay, well, I'll send in Negative Space One.
Send in the comic as opposed to the script.
Yeah, I said you send in like the finished PDF comic, like the art and everything, and even then I was like, wait, are we supposed to send that in? And then you don't want to ask a question because they're like, oh, you can't read applications. So, yeah, I start sweating on it. Like, I'm massively prone to overthinking everything. And so, except what comes out of my mouth during a podcast, I don't overthink that. It just flows. And then I'm laying in bed later pulling a Job again. Oh, I've made a big mistake. So I sent in Negative Space One because I was like, well, that comic probably is the best thing I've written, and I feel like it's a very decent number one issue. But also, you're not going to send in issue three because the editor won't have context, and that's no good. So I sent in number one, and so I was like, well, all right, well, that covers me for like very character-based stuff, very deep emotionally themed stuff. So I was trying to figure out how to balance what to send. I considered sending in Headspace as a trade. And then I thought, you know, then they're going to read like 100 pages. That's a lot, especially if like 200, it was about 2,000 people, I think, going over that did it. So I was like, well, I don't want to do that. So I eventually ended up sending in Dear Editor 1, which I'd really like ummed and ahed, but I thought, you know, well, Negative Space covers a lot of the character and emotion and deep thematic stuff, and Dear Editor shows like a different style. It shows me that I can do crime. It shows that I can do something that's a little more plot-driven. But also, and this was key to me finally choosing it, it's that tablet page format. I wanted to show that I could write for a different page style.
Yeah.
And I thought that that might be helpful, especially because DC does those digital first books that are tablet pages.
Yeah.
I'd love to write one. Oh, I'd love to write one of those. despite having spoken to Tom Taylor, who wrote Injustice for, what, 3 years, and he just said it was a blistering turnover. Like, he was just, you're just cranking scripts out.
Really?
And he's good enough that that book was phenomenal, like phenomenal. And he was just churning it out. But yeah,
that book is one of those rare ones that is a sort of tie-in to like a video game, which is more than up to the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it goes beyond the video game. I enjoyed the video game. I thought it was great. But the series itself was good enough to become its own thing. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally did. It was their best-selling thing. Between the numbers it was pushing on Comixology in those first years, and then even when it was like collected in trades and hardcovers, it was New York Times bestseller. Like, it was – that hugely made Tom's career. Like made it for life sort of thing, and rightfully so. So yeah, I'd love to get my hands on one of those. So I was like, well, I'll give them Dear Editor, and then hopefully, you know, they'll see, you know, just see that idea real early. And again, I like the first issue of Dear Editor. I think I did a pretty decent job. So yeah, those are the two things I sent in. And then, yeah, then you just wait. And I'm just like, well, to be honest, I didn't think I'd get in. So I wasn't sitting there refreshing the email or anything. I was pretty certain that I wouldn't get in, actually. Then when I got – well, first of all, those the rejection emails started coming out. And my initial thought was like, oh, cool, I don't even deserve a rejection email. Sick burn, DC. Well played. And then I logged on to the – because you had to, like, set up an account on the talent development website. I actually logged in and checked my account to make sure I'd put the right email address, because I was sure I must have written, like, you know, RyanDLindsay@gmail.com or whatever, and they would have sent it there. So I went on and checked that, and they had the right details, and so I was like, oh, I have no idea what's happening. And just had to, like, sweat for a little bit more, and eventually they sort of sent an email, and they were like, congrats, you're in. And
brilliant.
Well, I think I was at work when I got the email.
School's
cancelled. Everybody go.
Yeah, you couldn't really strip naked and just run through the hall screaming from the top of your voice then.
I could, but I got reprimanded for it.
It's totally worth it. The bird. I'm out.
Totally worth it. I did, and I was like flipping off the boss, and then I reread the email, and it was like, you know, you're not going to get paid straight away. And I'm like, oh, I thought you guys were going to give me a lump sum of like, oh. I misread the application again. My bad.
Another Job moment.
Yeah.
My life is full of them. But yeah, so it was really cool. And then it was like, you know, we're in and we'll be starting soon. And it's and then somebody said to me, they're like, look, I've never studied formally writing. I've never taken a degree or anything like that. But I read a lot about writing. I tweet a lot about writing. I talk a lot about writing. Like, I immerse a lot of my life and brain into it. And they were like, aren't you worried it's just going to be going over the stuff you know? And I was like, well, first of all, I don't know shit. But I also, you can go over old lessons with the knowledge you have now, and you'll come up with something new. Like, you're crazy if you're not reading Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics every few years, because you'll read it again and go, I really, really get what's going on there. Very cool. Very cool. Like, or you'll be reading it and you'll, like, one little thing will help you break the story that you're on, and you'll go, oh, shit, I can use that in this new thing that I'm doing. And it's like, you know, because every time I, like, read that, the sequence where it's like, here's how time works on a comic page. I'm like, oh, I love this, and I reread it, and then it's like it twigs an idea. You can never go back to the well enough, I don't think. So no, doing the course, I was like, well, obviously I don't know anything, and I love to relearn, but also you're learning under Scott Snyder.
Yeah. We're going to want to go in with an empty cup, aren't you? And sort of
yeah.
Take it for what it is and get what you can out of it.
Yeah, pretty much. Like it's the sort of thing where you're like, this is a big opportunity. The dude has very much proven that he knows his stuff. I love that he has an educational background to back it up as well. And so, no, like, I'm there to listen, and I'm there to, like, I've got a notebook, I'm taking notes, I'm reading extra stuff. Like, yeah, like, I'd be crazy if I didn't, like, wholeheartedly throw myself into it. So, yeah, it's a real, real wild experience. And, you know, the only scary thing now is, you know, what happens at the other end. Who knows?
Oh, well, considering your library of stuff so far, I just think it's going to be great. Because what you've done so far is fantastic. So I just can't wait to see if you get your hands on a DC character or two and see what we can do.
It would be fun. There are definitely characters I want to get right into.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, I could do a mini with this. I could make this. Like, again, like, what is this story about? Does this story matter? I would love to tell stories that matter at DC and really, like, hit something, because I'd had a discussion with someone recently. They're like, well, what sort of superhero books do you like? And I was like, well, it's always when they take a superhero and they mash it with another genre. So I was like, you know, the way they put Hawkeye into grounded crime, the way they put Vision into like a Ray Bradbury suburban weird tone story. Like, who knew we needed a book about Vision? I hate you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
they announced that, and I was like, why?
Yeah.
Snore. And then, you know, you read the first issue, you read the first page, and you just go, oh man.
You see those sort of those lines, and you think, right, okay, this book is just clearly a cash in because he's appearing in the Avengers. And then you look at the book and you're like, oh right, they've given it to someone who wants to do something different.
Yeah.
Like, this is.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
And it proves that you can do that with superheroes. Like, they'll probably still be the minority, just as, you know, if you took all of Image's lineup, the brilliant cream of the crop is a minority. Like, that's just statistics. Yeah. But you can do it sort of anywhere, and you can almost do it with anything if you're the right creator for it. Like, you needed Fraction and Aha and Annie Wu to make that Hawkeye book happen. And getting Gabriel Walter and Tom King on Vision, like, it's that I couldn't have written that book. I could not have thought up that book.
Tom King is an awesome writer as well. I love Tom King.
Yeah, I'm really starting to continue a massive appreciation of his, like, sort of thought process.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, you come into a workshop like this, and I'm like, personally, like, I'm not the guy that they should be tapping to write, like, some event comic.
Yeah.
Like, I just, not to say event comics can't have meaning or theme, but, like, it's that sort of style. I'm not bombastic enough to write the tentpole Hollywood film. Yeah. They need to give me a B-level character, hopefully, or something like that. Like, they need to sort of... And from what I can tell, like, that's why they brought, you know, the eight of us into the room. They like our voice.
Yeah.
Because I openly said that at the start. I was like, you know, you guys have picked me based on Negative Space and Dear Editor to then write, you know, these god characters. Or at least, you know, learn about writing the god characters. Nothing is set in stone with what happens at the other side. I was like, but what I'm hoping is, you know, you've picked me for my voice to use that voice. And they were like, they were great. They're like, yeah, absolutely. Like, we're not bringing you in so we can reshape you into generic writer X.
Yeah.
So you can bring something new. And I was like, sweet.
It shows the vision, doesn't it? I mean, if you think of Marvel Studios, going back to them, they put the Russo brothers, like, these guys did comedy, you know, they did all of these great comedy shows and a couple of comedy films, and then they said, right, you're doing Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And if you look at it on paper, you're thinking, these are comedy guys, how are they going to do an action film? And what did they create? Probably one of the best Marvel films of them.
Indeed,
all.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite.
Yeah,
absolutely.
A lot of people's favorites, you know. And these are the guys helming everything, you know, a lot of the stuff going forward. It's having that vision of seeing not just the genre of what people are doing, but their abilities to do the actual job at hand, you know, to tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, if you can tell a story, then why should you be limited to telling it in a horror genre? Why should you be limited to telling it in, like, a drama, you know, etc.? You know, yeah. So, I mean, from all of our listeners and like from us, I think it's well deserved that you're part of this.
Definitely.
And I look forward to hearing how it goes. I hope you don't stress too much about it. It'll be fine. You know, we're here for you if you want to talk about it.
The right amount of stress.
Yeah.
You've got to have them. Yeah.
It's a good stress.
Yeah. It's that really good grinding of your teeth. It's really positive. Wait.
And the great works of art never come easy, do they? So.
No. That's it. They need to. You got to work at it and really push it around. And that's what they're keen to do, which is like, it's just really got me excited to like, to get stuck into the ideas that they have and the way that we're going to do things. So yeah, no, the outpouring of love was really cool over this past week with people hitting me up and emailing and being genuinely, or at least seeming genuinely happy about me being there. I was really happy. I saw a tweet from Australian artist Tristan Jones, who's illustrating the Aliens book at Dark Horse at the moment. And he tweeted out, he was like, oh, I saw the DC thing announced, and so I went searching for news, and all I could see was tweets at Ryan, like, being happy that he's in. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Like, that's really cool. So, no, it's been huge, and I can only hope, throughout the next semester that I'll be working with them, that, you know, some good stuff comes out of it. That would be, I feel like having taken a space in the room, I really, really want to, like, use it right. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, our listeners, and if DC are listening to this, you know what a monster Ryan is in real life. So we're sorry. but for those people who want to read some of your stuff, Dear Editors is live now. Where can they find it on Kickstarter?
Yeah, because a few people have hit me up if they can get it off Kickstarter at the moment. We have left it Kickstarter exclusive. So if they just sort of Google Dear Editor Hack at the moment, they'll have, by the time this goes up, it should have just a few days left to get in. For a dollar or more, we've cruised past $4,000. We've cruised past 400 backers, and we'll see what sort of value we can add to the very last days of the campaign. They can definitely get in on that. The reason we haven't made it more widely available is because we've had mild publisher interest here and there, but nothing has ever firmed up. Like, you know, you'd love to get it picked up in the end as a trade or continued or, you know, whatever. And every now and then, like, I talked to an editor at a really big publisher once and showed them, and they were like, oh man, this is awesome. Like, this is phenomenal. And I'm like, oh cool. Like, do you want to pick it up? And they're like, no way. I have no idea what I'd do with this. And I'm like, oh, I'm glad you liked it. So it's one of those things where we've just been like, well, let's just Kickstarter and keep it ours. Like, you know, we can offer the old issues in the Kickstarter because they're not on Comixology, and we can offer, you know, decent, like, you know, we hold sort of all the rights, all the pages. So we've got that. So they can find it there, and there could be plans for something down the track with it. But yeah, they can find that there. And then, you know, if they want a lot of the other stuff I've written, if they hit up Comixology, you know, Negative Space is there, Headspace is there, and a few other sort of one-shots and other things I've been involved with are certainly on there, so it's probably the best place to get a bunch.
Awesome. Well, I'm a pledger to the latest Kickstarter, and I've got one and two of Dear Editor, so I highly recommend it. It's well worth it. So, and thank you for all the freebies you've been throwing my way.
Yeah, cheers.
Absolutely. Like,
it's amazing.
Totally my pleasure. Because you always worry that, you know, someone could wait until the end and just cancel their pledge and be like, well, I got all this other free stuff. I'm out. Like, because it's just there for download. And actually, the day it was announced that I got in the DC thing, like within that first hour, someone cancelled their pledge on the campaign. And I was like, wait, is this a reaction? Wait, what's going on? I'm sure it was coincidence. And it was only a $1 pledge. So I couldn't really cry. But it just sort of made me laugh. And I was like, oh, no. Now you know you've made it when the backlash comes.
Yeah, wait for the backlash. Remember where he was before he became an egotistical monster. He was on this episode. This was before he became the monster he's going to be in 5 years.
Yeah, before I really started lashing out at people. Don't you know who I am? That sort of stuff starts coming out. Then you know you're in big trouble. Hopefully people, back to Kickstarter, because Dear Editor is a book I love. Like, it's the weird crime story. I mean, I love that the first issue is like, we've got the crime, and then in the second issue, the vampires come. Like, it's our world. We can do that weird turn. And, you know, I mean, our lead character is a deer man. Like, we kind of could do whatever we wanted. And seeing Sammy do some of these things in the third issue, like, Sammy does some amazing pages. He just gets better. and better. And and if you dig that, people can hit up. Sammy and I did the book Chum at Comics Tribe, a surf noir sort of a book about a bunch of seedy people that you'll be happy to see slowly die as the story progresses. And they can find that on Comixology, or the trade will be available early next year. It'll be up in previews soon. I'm not sure the exact date, but it'll be available to pre-order very soon, and we'll certainly get word out about that.
Awesome stuff. So there's plenty more. There's plenty of Ryan K. Lindsay, not Ryan D. Lindsay, Ryan K. No. Lindsay stuff out there to check out. Ryan D. Lindsay, he's a hack. You don't want him.
He is.
Yeah.
That D stands for dick. That's what he is. Nobody likes him.
No, but we love Ryan here. Yeah, thanks for joining us, Ryan. Stick with us for the rest of the show. We got a couple of shout outs. Dan, we've got a shout out for another Kickstarter, haven't we?
Yeah, another Kickstarter. A Kickstarter for the Nottingham Comic Con anthology, Forest Tales. That's now live. It's a whole slew of creators in on this one. The first pledge is £2 and you get a digital comic. So we've got the cream of UK creators, Mark Lemming, Steve Beckett, Nick Angel, Dean Beattie, Andy Blore, Tony Ismond. You're in there, Vince, too.
I am indeed. So it's not Emily Owen, Gary Mitchell. Cream of the crop. I'm in there as well.
But. Matt Garvey, there's absolutely tons of creators. So go check out that if you just search for Nottingham Comic Con or on Kickstarter, or check out the show notes. We have it linked there.
Awesome. That sounds good. I like all of those names mentioned. That's great. Yeah.
Wow, good. Check, fantastic check cover by Dean Beattie.
Dean Beattie, the legend that is Dean Beattie. We need to get him back on the show because he's just so spiteful. not really, Dean. We love you. He's going to hurt me next time I see him. So that's brilliant. It's been a wonderful show so far, but let's recommend some stuff for the good people out there. Dan, do you want to recommend something?
Yeah, life drawing class. It's not on all the time, but on Friday night I went to Orbital's life drawing class, which was themed around the spirit, because they recently won the Eisner Award. So they did the Eisner character, the spirit.
Well and deserved.
It's such a great comic shop, Orbital. It's fantastic. And I had a really good time. I was really fucking tired, but I did my best to draw as well as I could. And I'll post up the results on Vanguard, and I'll put the link on the Awesome Comic Pod. I do want to kind of shout out to kind of listeners to see what they thought of this. For me, when you go to a life drawing class, it's more kind of like the gym for your drawing muscles, as it were. And
that's
you're trying
a
to
great way to describe it.
Yeah. And you're trying to actively kind of record what you're seeing as best you can. It's not kind of so much about drawing cartoons or comics, but there was a lot of people there were kind of just doing a strange interpretation of drawing kind of like bubbly characters, and I've got nothing against that, but I just didn't think I thought primarily life drawing was an exercise, and that's all it essentially was. But I'd love to hear people's feedback and what they kind of take from it, or if they do classes themselves, because it certainly helps my drawing, and I'd recommend it if you don't. So I think Orbital do these classes every 1 or 2 months, and they've always got a theme around them. There was a Tarzan one.
It's just a cool thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's life drawing, but not in the sense of like someone's going to stand there with their tackle out. You'll have someone dressed up as a comic book character.
Yeah. Well, they recreated characters, poses like from the comic where the spirit's tied up or he's spanking a young lady's backside.
Oh, classic.
Yeah, that raised a few eyebrows, but...
Not yet. Not Dan Butcher. Oh no, he's hardened. So that's sort of not.
No pun.
He's got a hard end. What did you say? That's terrible.
Did you use your rubber? Right. No. Let's move on. No, that sounds awesome. I wish stuff like that happened in my neck of the woods. If I'm in Londinium when that happens next.
Yeah, give it a go. Check one of those.
My recommendation for folks this week is issue 2 of a book that I've talked about in the past by Mr. Eric Powell. This is Hillbilly, issue 2, Inroad Death. Now, it's from Comixology and in your local comic book stores. This is via Albatross Publishing, which is, I think, his own sort of self-publishing type thing. 24 pages. It's all about... he's called Rondell the Hillbilly, but he looks more like a sort of... if Rob Zombie was in Deadwood and carried a massive cleaver, it looks like that kind of character. He's carrying a huge cleaver that's come from hell, and he uses it to dispatch witches. And he, in the second issue, it's an amazing, it's very poetic telling as well. I haven't read too much of Eric Powell's stuff. I know there's The Goon, etc., but I was so taken with Hillbilly issue one. And there's a beautiful artwork aside, you know, there's a very poetic way he writes things, you know, very much about folkloric sort of witches and the way people talk to each other. And in issue two, you've got the main character. He must cross over into the plane of death to defeat supernatural forces. And he comes across a character, the Buzzard, who was in one of his previous books before. I think the Goon, he must have been in there. So, but this was a character that, although it's people, you know, Eric Powell fans will know it, I didn't need to know it to get the idea of what was going on, which is always good, because I think you've always got to think about new readers and people, you know, you can't just put a character in and expect everyone to know who it is. And it is literally sort of death walking from place to place, and as he's dealing with these sort of villainous witches, he sees death with him. And death isn't someone that he can fight or anything like that. He just knows if death is there, someone's going to die. So through the whole story, he's kind of thinking, this is going to be the day that I die. Because, you know, he'll face someone, and he knows at the end of that, someone's going to come off second best, which is a great sort of tension to add to the story as well. You can get it on Comixology and, like I say, in your local comic book shop. I mean, if you just want it for the artwork alone, Eric Powell's just on fire with this book. So Hillbilly, look for it, because I love it. And,
awesome.
Yeah, and there's beards everywhere. Gotta love that.
Sweet. I mean... I've been waiting for you to like hook me. I'm like, I'm interested. Sold.
Beards and meat. Sweet. Cleavers. That's all you need in life, isn't it?
Indeed.
Ryan, what would you like to recommend to our listeners?
I'll drop two, actually, because I'm just greedy like that. First one is another Kickstarter, because it's always nice to show the love. Alex Automatic by James Corcoran and Fraser Campbell is up on Kickstarter at the moment, and it's just a really good-looking book. Yeah. I believe it's a one-shot.
It is indeed. Fraser was a past guest and was talking a bit about the book. It's a one. Yeah, I know. No, we loved him. It's a one shot. There may be more stories in the future, but we'll see. But
that is such a smart way. That's what we did with Dear Editor. That first issue sits alone, but obviously there was room for more. It's a really good. It's like, it's about a spy who thinks he might be in a TV show sort of thing. It looks really like funky and meta layered, and the art is gorgeous and the colors are good. Like it's, it's like a really funky book. I saw, you know, while I was trying to find ways to toot my own horn and look up backer numbers, I saw they've crossed over 200 backers for their book, which is phenomenal. It's their first campaign, I believe, and they're doing really well, and it's well priced. I like that campaign. I like the way they've put it together. And the other thing I was going to push out there is Paul Aller and Damien Cauchiero. I'm sure I'm not saying his last name right. Doing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles universe series, and their first issue came out not that long ago, a few weeks ago. It was the like top selling non big two, non Walking Dead or Saga book.
I've heard a lot of good things about the Turtles book.
It's really good. It's really like that. He's telling like a, it's like a Die Hard with the Turtles sort of story.
I mean,
yeah, like it's such an easy style, and he nails it. Like there's banter in there. The villain is really good. He's written a lot of Turtles now, Paul, and he obviously knows universe well, and he's really got his voice well there. But this, I've liked a lot of his stuff. I thought his Shredder one shot was really good. I thought his Utrom Empire mini was really good. But this is like right up there. It's just really good action. It's the sort of thing where I read it because I was like, oh, this is what I don't know how to do well.
Yeah.
Like this is like good,
is
really
it easy
good
to
action
pick up, because like I say, I've been hearing lots of good things, but it's whether you can jump into it not knowing everything that came before. Is it a good book to, is it easy?
Yeah,
to
no
jump
completely, because he's got Baxter Stockman in there, which is a character I'm just like, I've touched upon him here and there, but I still don't feel familiar.
Is he
with
the fly
him
guy?
Yeah,
Stockman, he is the person
he's
turns
the fly
into
guy.
He's a fly. Yeah, he turns into a fly.
It's weird because all the kind of incarnations, he's always kind of like had a bit of a kind of, he's never been a great kind of, I don't know, it's never, for me, he's never been a great character. They never seem to have the angle on him. In the recent TV, the cartoon my son watches, he's kind of like not quite got it, and he gets a bit of technology that's beyond him to kind of give him that boost. But yeah, he's never really done it for me, that one.
No, whereas here it's like it's good. Yeah, he's got him like playing off of April O'Neil, and it's good. And the turtles all interact really well, and you end on like a really, really good beat. And it's just like, it feels like the very original Turtles series.
Oh,
the
old nice.
Eastman and Laird stuff. Like, it feels dark and layered and smart. Like, it doesn't feel like the cartoon or anything like that. Like, it's a real sort of hard edged version, but not like trying to be Frank Miller gritty. It's just like, it's just a real like motion forward action story. It's great. So to see it get the sales that it did was phenomenal. And you know, I know Paul's doing great work on that. So if anyone like loved the Turtles, but then has certainly fallen off on it, and now it's like it's benched in years of new continuity, this is totally like a very cool jumping in point to get that same 80s flavor that, you know, you used to chase down in the comic store in the back issues.
Awesome. I think I might have to pick that up and jump back into the Turtles world.
Mm.
Far away definitely. From any of this Michael Bay nonsense. Blech.
Oh, man, I still haven't seen those. Point of pride, yeah. Nah.
The second one did really well. I've not seen the first or the second. So.
I think the second one, they addressed like all the problems that people had with the first one, so they've tried to make a live-action version of the cartoon. But at the same time, you're still ice skating uphill, aren't you? Really, I think.
Yeah,
pretty much. Mm. Yeah, I respect Michael Bay to a degree as like a visual sort of storyteller, and you know, like you look at Bad Boys, like the dude, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah,
Bad Boys and The Rock. Oh, what a combo!
Yeah, and then he's just I don't know. He's just fallen into this like it's like he's making fun of himself.
Yeah,
he's always become a parody of himself.
Yeah,
it's really ridiculous. And so it's like I saw the first Transformers and was like, nah. And then I bailed on like all of those. Like they're not well made. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around. So I'm interested to see those Turtles flicks. Ugh. I'm sure my kids will get old enough eventually to watch it.
Google Michael Bay GIFs, and they've taken like scenes out of TV shows and nature documentaries and Michael Bayed them. So where things are jumping, there's explosions and... They're fantastic.
Amazing.
That's spectacular. We had an ad for a bank down here, for the Commonwealth Bank, and it was like a Michael Bay in like the executive suite, like pitching to them. He's like, I'm going to have this ad and like stuff's going to explode and I'm going to film it with like five helicopters and it's going to be rad. And they're like, yeah, we're a bank. But it was him, and he was like, I don't care. Like, he was like, he'll take the mickey. And I'm like, oh, I gotta respect that to a degree, but I just wish he would, because it didn't he do a movie just like an actual real like with characters movie recently?
Oh,
it's something between the Turtles flicks.
Pain Again.
There was Pain Again.
That's what I'm thinking.
And
he
also did that army one, didn't he? I've forgotten what it's called.
The Benghazi one.
Yeah.
Well, it's got old mate Jim from The Office. I love it.
Yeah.
And seeing
I've got mixed
him get
feelings
a role
about
like
that film. I saw it, but it was kind of like it left me a little nonplussed. But
the
action sequences though. Yeah, you can't beat that.
You didn't have Nicolas Cage defusing a chemical bomb. That's the problem with it.
Yeah.
It was really missing that kind of the character turning around 360 degrees with the camera spinning the opposite way in slow motion.
You can't. Once I figure out how to do that with a comic, I'm going to retire. Yeah. I'll be set.
Yeah, that'd be it.
It'll be like, you know on Facebook where there's like those 360 videos?
Yeah.
And you can move it around? I want a splash page and you move the iPad around and you can just like Michael Bay around them. Doves flying and stuff.
Helicopters overhead.
A 360 Bay panel. That's what
I got to Skype with Sammy Cavella right now and work out how to do this.
Well, before you do that,
Bucky
thank you
just
very...
standing there.
I mean, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Ryan.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate you fitting me in. Trying to get time zones to match with the Antipodes down here is ridiculous.
We did it.
We nailed it.
So it means we can do it again in the future. And I think we've only scraped the tip of the iceberg. So Ryan K. Lindsay will be back, even if we have to hunt him down. He's not aware he's going to be back, but we'll find him somehow. and we hope you all enjoyed this episode. I'm so excited about how well it's gone. I can't get my words out. but there's one way you can get your words out, and that's to email us. Email awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any books or events coming up that you want us to know about, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod, where we announce our new guests and whatever's coming up next, and also just spamming the world with links to this episode and more.
Photos of my mustache.
Oh yeah, that sweet, sweet mustache. And the aviators. The aviators make it. Aviators make everything better.
Let the world know I looked like that for about 4 hours. Because then my wife got home from work and was like, "What are you doing?
Take those glasses off."
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's there for everyone to see eternally now. That's how everyone sees you.
People keep using a photo. I put up a photo once. I'd got my beard was a little bit longer, and I just got like a shirt, and so I buttoned it up to the top, like to the very top, and I took a picture, and I was like, "Check me out, I'm a hipster," like making fun of people. And now it's like the top Google image search for me, and people keep using that photo at cons and stuff, and I'm like, "Oh, I look like an idiot." So I'd rather the mustache and aviators, like 100%.
Be careful what you post, people. Be careful what you post.
And yeah, make sure you don't use that photo, Vince.
Yeah, it's true. I'll save that one for the next time he's on. Speaking of people posting things, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, where we post up the latest bits about the episodes, what books we've been reading. Occasionally we'll just talk about topics of the moment. But get involved. We love it when people get involved on the Facebook page, so get involved, people. Thank you for listening on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. Those things matter. We want to get this out like a Kickstarter, like a small press book, like someone begging for change. We just want anyone to know about this, and we want you to get involved. So, very much leave us a review. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the Stitcher Network or on the Podnose Podcast Network. We love each and every one of you.
Yeah.
There you go. Does that sound sincere?
That sounded great.
Did you believe me?
I did.
That's all it was totally real, and I have emotions.
Connection. Look, we all know you're a sociopath. Don't worry about it now. Thank you for listening. Now, where can people get us on Twitter? Dan Butcher.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and it can be Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Which you should. I cannot wait to see what happens in the next panel, Dan. I've been waiting for that all week.
About 4 or 5 pages, well, a bit more than that, this issue left. So it's going to be explosive.
I cannot wait. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm on the edge of my seat, although I'm not on a seat.
Good.
Yeah. So you might get a bit of fan hate mail from me next week. You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic, The Red Mask, at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Ryan D. Lindsay, where can people find you online?
It's RedTube. I'm sure Ryan D. Lindsay's pages are huge.
Yeah, the D is for dick. Remember that.
Yeah, you know it. Twitter at Ryan K. Lindsay, Facebook/RyanKLindsay. And also you can follow my newsletter, which comes out weekly and is just sort of, if you liked this podcast, you're going to love the newsletter. It's full of waffly crap. You're going to be all over it. It's tinyletter.com/RyanKLindsay.
Brilliant stuff.
Awesome.
There you go. Tons for you people to check out. Thank you for listening as always. And from Ryan, Dan and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Make loads of comics. And as always, just stay awesome. See you, folks.
See you later.
Bye. Taken many a comic dick in the mouth. It's terrible.
Oh, there is the outtake. Yeah. Brilliant.
Drinking down the money juice.
And that's not called breaking in. It's called gagging down.